Welcome to the Watson Weekly. Today, I review the Q4 and full year 2025 earnings from a number of the major players, including Amazon, Meta, Shopify, PayPal, UPS, and Walmart. The result is a jam-packed 25-minute briefing on the future of retail in 2026. Amazon, for its part, seems to be executing well, and their future very much depends on their AI bets. Although it's notable, they're adding 20% more Whole Foods stores, in a sign that they're not giving up on grocery. Meta seems to have a case of split personality disorder. A highly profitable advertising business with Instagram Reels executing well, and a number of bets on augmented reality and the metaverse with a few green shoots, but it's only paying off so far with billions in capital expenditures. Shopify, for its part, had a great earnings, and I thought their B2B growth was a headliner there. I do outline in the webinar what I saw was an upcoming agentic jump ball with Stripe. There may be conflict with some areas after years of cooperation. And PayPal, what we have is a ship without a captain, and the sharks are circling. The chairman of the board of directors is now running the company, seemingly through a structured sale process, and several of the parts might be sold off, maybe to Stripe. UPS, on the other hand, is a company caught between a rock, Amazon, and a hard place, the union contract on the other side. How long is CEO Carol Tomei expected to stick around? She can't be having a lot of fun. Finally, we end on Walmart, the big W, who is probably the largest and best executing retailer right now, having recently navigated a major leadership transition almost flawlessly. If you find conversations like this helpful, make sure you're following the show and don't miss future episodes. Also, if you're not tracking our newsletter, check that out at www.watsonweekly.com. All right, let's get started. We are talking Q2 2026 earnings. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about all the big players, and so we are excited to dive into it. It's just me and my lonesome today, so sorry if you were expecting Nick. In terms of our sponsors, we wanted to say thank you to our two big sponsors. Our premium sponsor for the year is Avalara. I've used Avalara at basically every stop in my career, as well as a lot of new client installs in Shopify, off Shopify, for marketplaces. They are really the gold standard of tax and compliance solutions out there. We'd also like to recognize our sponsor for this webinar as well, which is Kasama. This is a software integrator and agency owned by none other than the famous Mark Rubin, a good friend of the show and personally. Seriously, if you need a build, if you need maintenance, if you need services, definitely check out the folks at Kasama, some of the nicest, most honest people you will ever run across in the e-commerce industry. If you don't know Mark Rubin, you should definitely get to know him. We also had a podcast recently, just in the last couple of weeks, with Mark himself, who I've known for well over 15 years at this point. So thank you again for Kasama for joining us. Before I get into earnings, I want to talk a little bit about what earnings mean. And I like to cover the big players for really one reason. And that reason is pretty simple. What the big players do creates ripple effects that affects the rest of us. So not only do we get to learn about trends before they happen, we also learn about what things might be affecting us, new fees, how the consumer is doing, all these things. The public companies are forced to tell us what's going on. And so as a result, that could be beneficial for you. I recently gave a keynote at our NRF event. If you attended, thank you again for attending, where we talked about really the battle for David and Goliath and the big companies out there and the small companies that are going to be successful in 2026, in my opinion, are the ones that are moving quickly. They're not waiting for something to happen. And you're seeing that happen already this year with tariffs. There's going to be a choice that you're faced with very soon, which is to wait for more data or to just get on with it and to keep moving. So I'm excited about getting to that. if you are worried about being the underdog, I'll just say, like, don't. You actually have an advantage because you can move faster. And once we get into UPS and Walmart, we'll see that dichotomy pretty sort of like in stark relief. Some of the things that we're going to talk about today, Amazon, Meta, Shopify, UPS, PayPal, and Walmart. That's who we're going to cover. These are my favorite, I don't want to say my favorite companies. You know, there's some challenging folks in here, but let's talk a little bit about Amazon. And I think there are a few things that we should discuss about here. AWS is at 20 and 24% growth. They have many multi-billion dollar businesses. And if you look at online stores, the $278 billion business growing 10% year over year. Their third-party business, meaning all the fees they collect from sellers, $175 billion business growing 12% year over year. AWS, another $128 billion business growing 20% year over year. That is the fastest growth that AWS has recorded in the last 13 quarters. Their ads business is also continuing to grow because they keep making Prime Video better. They keep expanding their partnership with the NFL so that they have more ads inventory to display. 22% growth year over year on a $78 billion base. And their physical stores business is kind of their laggard, which is mostly Whole Foods. They shut down most of their Amazon Fresh, a $21 billion business growing at 5% year over year. 5% sounds like a pretty sad number because it's like an average retailer. It kind of characterizes the broader Walmart growth. So it's not bad, but I think Walmart has, or what Amazon has realized here is that their strategy for physical retail hasn't really worked out. They did make one big announcement on the call that they're going to add essentially another 100 stores to the Whole Foods fleet, which is about 20% growth by store count. Now, Amazon hasn't made this big a move for Whole Foods since the acquisition some number of years ago. And so that is a challenge. And Nick Thompson, thanks for your comment. Always love to have you in here. Amazon does seem like an undervalued stock. I would put Shopify somewhat in that number too, because there are some tech stocks that have been beaten down while people wonder what AI is going on. But Amazon made it clear that they have about a $240, $260 billion sales backlog, and they're spending $200 billion in CapEx, mostly on data center, on chips, on power. Apparently, I learned in the State of the Union address that we're going to be building our own power plants at tech companies, something I didn't know before last night. So I think Amazon AI is really the driver for them. They are a big investor in Anthropic. The recent Anthropic Claude model, if you haven't used it, 4.6, really knocked it out of the park. Cowork, there are a lot of knowledge workers, including myself, is worried about cowork. Like, are we going to have jobs in 5 years? TBD is the answer to that question, my friends. So we're going to keep looking at that. Meta, I think this is a company that has a little bit of a split personality disorder. They Q4 revenue was up big, 24%. They have a $200 billion business with 30% operating margin. That is a big number. That's about $60 billion. Reels and the influence of AI on Reels. People are viewing Reels longer. That's helping their ads business because they have more inventory. The more time people watch videos, the more time they can watch ads, which really Meta is about ads. Now, what's the other personality here is they are spending over $100 billion on what Mark Zuckerberg calls super intelligence. But what is super intelligence? Frankly, I have no idea, no earthly idea, really. And the challenge is you have these big players, OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, Amazon, and then you have Meta, which came up with its Llama model. It's a little bit of the odd person out. It's hard for them to invest too much because they're mostly an ads company. Their Reality Labs, which is sort of their goggles and their Ray-Ban glasses, have lost $83 billion to date. The Ray-Ban smart glasses, there is like slight glimmers of hope here. Their sales tripled in 2025. That's something I think to look at. And the bet by Mark Zuckerberg that he said on the earnings call that I thought was most interesting, he basically told us that knowledge workers will be at a disadvantage in 5 years, at a competitive and cognitive disadvantage. And even like regular people, he actually didn't limit this quote to knowledge workers. If you're not using some kind of glasses, meaning AI is going to augment everything that we do in life, not necessarily just when we're at a computer. So when we're out and about, we can see something. You can already see sort of where it's going. You can put up your Google Gemini Pixel phone, you know, point it while you're at the market, ask them about reviews. It's going to show up right in front of you, which is interesting. Is that the form factor? Are glasses too small? No one wants to have a computer interface on your glasses, kind of this sort of face computer situation. It also feel like this Reality Labs, Zuck had a little bit FOMO. Clearly, they went all in by renaming the company several years ago on the metaverse. When that was the big thing, that turned out to be a huge fail. Meanwhile, now they're trying to get ahead on glasses, which feels to me like a slow developing business. Most people just want to have glasses because they go to the beach. I don't know, call me crazy. Not necessarily because they want an AI on their face. This is going to be a slow burn, and the hundreds of billions of dollars, how long will investors sort of stomach this level of risk? We've seen this from Mark Zuckerberg before. Less than 5 years ago, Mark Zuckerberg said that e-commerce was one of the biggest opportunities in the business. We have all this traffic. If we could just beat a small 2% conversion rate, we could have a huge business here. Like, well, less than 3 years after that started, we kind of saw that it was a little bit of a nothing burger. Frankly, a lot of the AI companies are kind of giving you the same story now. We're going to have so many users. We're going to be so personalized that everyone's going to check out here. They're not going to check out everyone else. It's not proven that that is going to happen. It doesn't mean that the AI isn't useful and that we can't use it for research consideration and everything else. But the reality is returns, refunds, reviews, brand storytelling. Is it going to be the best place on AI? Is it going to be your exclusive channel? I'm betting it's not going to be your exclusive channel. It will be an additional channel that you use. It also doesn't mean that there'll be no transactions happening there. There will be definitely transactions happening there. I just think it's a little bit overplayed. Shopify, fiscal year 2025 revenue up to $11.5 billion. That's up 30%. GMV is up to a staggering $378 billion. B2B is kind of a hidden gem within Shopify right now. It's coming from a small base, but it's up 96%. When Shopify says B2B, it doesn't mean exactly what the rest of the market talks about when it means B2B. It's mostly sort of wholesale retail partners of direct-to-consumer players. POS, I thought, was an interesting number, growing 29% year over year from a small base. I actually think that that 29% is somewhat of a bad number. And it doesn't mean that POS isn't growing on Shopify. I'm like pretty bullish there for sort of like the SMB and the lower mid-market. But once you get into the upper mid-market and enterprise, POS is a tough slog for Shopify. Why do I say this? The Shop Pay GMV, Shop Pay rates on POS are on the struggle bus. Let's put it that way. And if you have over $1 billion business and you're getting basis points above interchange, there is no way you're going to use Shopify payments on the POS system. It is just not economical for you. And you're going to give back all those cost savings on the channel. I also think there is an undertold story being told on Shopify now, which is, I call it the agentic jump ball, which is Shopify and Stripe have been two of the closest partners you can imagine in the last many years. Shopify is an owner, part owner of Stripe. It's also 64 cents out of every dollar in what's called merchant services business, which is like almost 70% of Shopify's business now. It's the fastest growing part, goes to Stripe. And so not just to Stripe, but they're by far the biggest person there. Stripe is saying in the agentic area, you need payments because the entire experience is going to be managed by agents, either ones that are interacting with humans or ones that are autonomous. Why do you need a checkout? Shopify is basically saying checkout is complicated. You're going to need a checkout. To be honest, if I am like placing my bet somewhere, I like Stripe's story a little better because if they are, let's face it, I mean, you listen to Elon and the Cheeky Pint and some of these, I was listening to Stripe's 2025 annual report. I don't know what you call it when you're a private company and you release a 2025 letter. I'll just say that to Mr. Collison. They're basically saying that there's going to be an order of magnitude more digital agents than people in the world. Elon, on the same interview on Cheeky Pint about a week earlier, he said that the fraction of human intelligence, if you go out 10 years, is going to be much smaller compared to digital intelligence. Do you need a checkout in that era? It doesn't sound like it to me. If I'm a 100-year company, that's something I'm worried about. So I do think that agentic is both a risk and an opportunity for Shopify. They are way out in front of a lot of other platforms here, especially in the sort of the press point of view. When Shopify does something, they seem to get more press for it. I haven't quite figured out why, other than maybe Harley needs to get a raise. So hats off to the backward-hatted one. PayPal and UPS. This is going to be a fun one. Let's talk about PayPal first. The top item here is that PayPal is essentially a ship without a rudder. A little over a year ago, Alex Chriss came in and essentially wanted to reboot the entire company. PayPal has been a company that's been around for a long time. It's been through multiple owners. I think, frankly, the biggest mistake PayPal ever made in their entire history was being a part of eBay. If the original PayPal mafia stuck with the business as long as Stripe, Shopify, Amazon, some of these other big companies, we would be seeing a different PayPal today. However, can't rewrite the past. PayPal is clearly on the struggle bus. Revenue up 4%. That's less than, frankly, retail at Walmart. It's less than e-commerce. That's less than agentic growth. And so PayPal is kind of in a digital no man's land here. They're spending a lot just to keep their current users. And you can see that by the fact that their actually gross margins, actually their margins are decreasing. And so whenever you get an ad in your email saying, you are qualified to get PayPal credit. And I'm like, great, I never asked for it, but you're actually incenting me to get that. So it's a challenge. The one bright spot in is that Venmo is growing 20% year over year. Frankly, I think Venmo is really the crown jewel of PayPal at this point. I think that's what Stripe is bidding for. We just heard that Stripe is potentially sniffing around PayPal. The sharks or the vultures, depending on your metaphor, are circling PayPal right now. When you have a CEO exit and then the CFO takes over, it means there's a process running, meaning like the board is hearing offers for, let's make a deal. We have this collection of assets. It's clearly worthless to us. Surely it has to be worth something to someone else. That's the story of PayPal right now. So on UPS side, I think that UPS is really hamstrung by sort of two major forces. One is the Amazon glide down. Amazon reduced its volume to UPS in the last year by 50%, 1 million parcels a day reduction per day, 1 million per day in 2025. Another million per day will drop in 2026. That's what UPS's CEO, Carol Tomei, revealed on the call. Overall, in Q4, UPS reported a 3.2% revenue decline. Not to worry, everything's great because our revenue per piece went up 8%, which is kind of means to me that you're making more from the same parcels while the like addition by subtraction, like is your margin going up, your revenue per piece is growing up. Carol Tomei has done an admirable job, I think, navigating a tough situation. I don't think she's going to be the CEO another 5 years. I give her another 12 months tops. And I think by the end of the year, you might see UPS Carol Tomei saying, we've finished all the kerfuffles. We started with the unions. Sorry, guys. We finished the Amazon glide down and we really need to reposition the company for the future. A CEO is best place to do that. I've navigated some turbulent waters. It's been a tough time for them. And so I do believe that we will see a new CEO at UPS in the next couple of years. So that is something to watch. On the Walmart side, I do feel, Hendrick says, is this for all carriers? I do think there's been a realignment of the supply chain here. And I wanted to address Hendrick's comment. Amazon is coming in very aggressively from all shippers that I've spoken with for consumer parcels, meaning they can deliver consumer parcels cheaper than almost everyone else save the Postal Service. And when you say the Postal Service is profitable or unprofitable, they're really unprofitable because of the pensions and the healthcare and everything else. The rest of the operation is actually pretty streamlined. except when you consider Amazon. So really, no one compete with the Amazon scale for, at a logistics at this point. FedEx doesn't want the business. UPS doesn't want the business. That essentially gives Amazon a clear playing field for them. You have these regional carriers that are trying to, you know, allow shippers to implement zone skipping and other strategies. The consumer is gravitating toward these big platforms, Amazon, Walmart, Shein, Temu, who implemented their own logistics. TikTok Shop tried to force sellers into its own facilities and carriers. That was a huge mistake. But that's where I think the carriers shake out. Walmart, I'm going to continue the supply chain focus over here. It's interesting. A few notes came out of Walmart's earnings call. 60% of stores are now experiencing and receiving some level of automated freight. 50% of e-commerce shipments are now automated. And 35% of store orders that are placed, whether it's from digital channel or pickup, are now being received in less than 3 hours. And Walmart is the only company that can actually reach 95% of America in under 3 hours. And so I kind of think that Amazon is not in trouble, but I think Walmart is really laying down the gauntlet to Amazon. They're the only one at the scale. Membership and ads has now reached 1/3 of Amazon's operating profit, which is a huge number and a significant transformation of the business. So they're not at sort of like the US level profitability, but for a retailer that's one of the biggest in the world, when I talk about the biggest problem in 2026 is the giant that cannot move, Walmart is the giant that can move. And they've proven the ability to transform themselves and move quickly. I think that a process which started with the former CEO, Doug McMillon, acquiring Jet.com, bringing in Mark Lurie and his management team, the leadership of Walmart corporate now is the former Walmart US e-commerce leadership. Seth Dallaire, who was the chief growth officer in the US, is now the Walmart corporate growth officer. John Furner himself was the US CEO, and now he's the CEO of Walmart. So I do think that Walmart is saying something very clear to the market, which to me means, can we replicate this US playbook of 1/3 of all revenue is membership and ads globally? How can we continue to invest in automated facilities? It's a huge moat for the company. Their store experience, you know, they remodeled something like 674 stores last year, which is, I think, kind of a ridiculous number, you know, from a good point of view. And I think where Walmart had a great strategy in the last 5-6 years, Target really invested in cities. Walmart didn't invest as much as in cities with these smaller. Target invested in cities more, meaning they had much more smaller footprint stores. That became rife with crime. And then they had a lot of political missteps and with their customers. So Walmart is really executing on all cylinders right now. They gave us sort of the playbook for how to execute a leadership transition and to keep accelerating. So I predict more good things for Walmart going forward. In 2026, one of my big messages this year, I told you before, and was NRF, was to be bold. And I think the risk being the giant that cannot move, if you're David versus Goliath, you're a smaller player in the audience or a mid-market company, your advantage is your ability to move, especially news you've seen in the last couple of weeks, tariffs. We're talking about tariffs again in 2026. I can't freaking believe it either. It's kind of crazy. However, there are two moves at this point. One is to give the tariff question to like a cost of goods, importing to your supply chain and CFO leaders, and keep the rest of your business isolated from it. Let them keep moving and executing on all the things that you know are going to grow the business. You essentially can't cut your losses into growth. And so the biggest message that I would have for most people that are listening in is really don't make the same mistake that most people made last year. Assume that the economy is going to drop out. Assume that tariffs are going to cause the consumer to pull back. We've already kind of seen that playbook. We've already read that book, and it had a different ending. And so what we learned to me last year is the retailers that made smart investments were able to sort of buck the trends. There's definitely some warning signs in Walmart's earnings call I did want people to pay attention to. The less than 50,000 income cohort, they reported that quite a few of them are going from paycheck to paycheck right now, which I can understand with the cost of childcare, healthcare, residences, all the costs of daily life continue to go up. Still, consumers are still spending. We saw it in Q4. And so there's no risk. I'm not an economic prognosticator, will not assume to be one. What I do know is you have to make moves to grow, and you have to take those targeted risks to grow your business in 2024. So this has been the Retail Reckoning 2026 earnings webinar for Q4, the rest of last year, for the big players, what it means for your business. We have a newsletter. If you didn't know, watsonweekly.com, check it out. You can subscribe. I don't think you can like and subscribe, just subscribe. Get news directly from me multiple times per week. That pairs with the podcast, which is the Watson Weekly. We have interviews. We have the famous Monday podcast that you've known and loved. And then Jess and I always release on a Friday. And so thank you all for getting great content here. And we appreciate you listening today. Thank you again.